Welcome to The Skeptic's Guide to Investing with Steve Davenport and Clem Miller. Every 2 weeks, Steve and Clem bring you brief investment insights you may not find anywhere else. We hope you enjoy today's episode. Here are Steve and Clem.
Hello, everybody. Welcome to Skeptic's Guide to Investing with Steve Davenport and myself, Clem Miller. Today, we're going to be talking about using options to exit positions. You know, as many of you know, probably all of you know, markets have been reaching highs recently, stock markets. And, you know, it leads to the question, you know, at what point should one exit the market as a whole or individual positions? Today, we're going to talk to our options expert, Steve, about how you use options to actually exit positions. And so, you know, with that question, Steve, you know, how would one go about using options to exit?
So options have two different types, right? There's a put option, which gives you the ability to sell, and there's a call option, which gives you the ability to buy. And the way that you do this when you want to sell something is you would sell a call option, which would give the person who's buying the call option the right, but not the obligation, to buy at a price for a period of time at a level in the future. So, for example, if we have NVIDIA trading at 9 something, 25, and you said, I think that it's going to have trouble going through 1,000, but if it does, I'd be willing to sell at that price. So you look and you say, what options are out there for NVIDIA? And NVIDIA has a lot of volatility. So you're going to get compensated very well for this. So you look and say, okay, I'm going to sell 1,000 level, or an option priced at 1,000 for NVIDIA. And I'm going to do this for 3 months. And I'm going to collect $50, $100. It's really just the concept that you're taking the price and you're getting paid the premium. Now, it's really about trying to instill some discipline. When you think about selling, there's really always trouble, and that trouble is taxes. So I think that the simplest concept is that you want to sell your stock, not all of it, you're usually trimming it at some price in the future. And each option controls 100 shares. So in this example, with the price of NVIDIA being so high, and people may not have 100 shares, and that may make it hard for them to do this strategy. But the idea is put an option out there, get paid, and if you hit that price, you're satisfied. If you don't hit that price, you know, then you don't sell it, and you just collect the premium. So in an example, let's say that NVIDIA was 9.10, and you put out an option at 1,000, and it's got a July expiration, then if it goes up 90 more dollars or 10%, then you'd say, hey, I've paid, if capital gains are 15 or 20%, I've saved 10 of it by the increase in the price plus the premium. And that's a pretty good, you know, you're not worried as much about the impact on the taxes you have to pay, because the appreciation makes up some of that difference.
Mm-hmm. So, Steve, what's the downside really to doing that? You know, it sounds like there's a lot of upside, especially on the tax front. But what's the downside?
The downside is that the stock just moves down quickly, and then you would have wished you'd sold at 9.10. People have this perception when they see a price and they don't execute at all They don't sell a call. They don't sell any shares. And they just sit and watch. And after a while, people start to realize, hey, could I have handled this differently? You know, do we have, as investors, are we always learning? And I think that's the key. Are you getting better at making decisions? And does your process have some disciplines in place? And so when a position gets, look at NVIDIA year to date, up almost 90%. It's had an unbelievable run. It's a great company. We all agree with that. But there is a point at which you want to say, you know, nobody goes broke selling winners, right? They're taking profits and redeploying them will not solve all your timing questions, but it's a start. And that's how we look at the reason to use options. There are multiple reasons. One is a return enhancer. One is a risk reducer. But the other issue is, if the stock goes down from here, will you have regret? And that we're trying to minimize regret, maximize return, and reduce risk. I hope that, you know, we all can, we're all big boys and girls, and we all realize that we can make mistakes. In the use of options, what you're trying to do is mitigate some of those mistakes.
So you already mentioned that it helps with both risk and return. It reduces risk and also enhances return. But you know, Steve, how do you actually choose the option that you want to use? Is it volatility or is it some other factor?
Well, I like to look at target prices. I also like to look at whether the person feels, you know, that a certain price is what they'd be satisfied with. If they bought it at 400 and it gets to 1,000, a 250% return, you know, feels very good, right? 150, you know. So we look at volatility as an indicator, because when you see the volatility, you know that the price of the option is the highest when the volatility is the highest. So if I'm comparing two options and one has a volatility of 48 and the other has a volatility of 55, and I look at the historic vol for NVIDIA and it's 45, I know that that 48 is better than the 45 average, but that 55 really stands out. So I look for volatility, and what usually happens is around earnings announcements, volatility goes up. So yes, around earnings, the price could go up, and you could, you know, one of the risks that I didn't mention previously is it could go above that price, right?
Yeah.
So if you're at 1,000 and it goes to 1,100 on the next earnings call, you're going to say, I sold out at 1,000.
Right.
I got paid $50 or $60 in premium, but now the stock's 1,100, which leads me to my original comment that we've tried to write on some amount of, not the whole amount, of shares you own, so that you still participate with some of your shares, but some of your shares have been sold at a price. And that's where we talk about opportunity cost. There's an opportunity that you missed. There are opportunities out there for names, for example, like we talked about in other podcasts, like Tesla. There's a huge opportunity cost that when you could have bought that 2 or 3 years ago and you would have a great return. But there
not
are
lately, though.
Why you do and don't buy certain names. And if you can't explain or understand how the price is, you know, going to be delivered to you in terms of growth in sales, growth in profitability. So with this example, I would like people to think there are always opportunity costs. And as long as you're aware of them, you feel much better in terms of your results.
So Steve, Tesla is a great example of a lot of volatility, but I want to make sure, I mean, you and I understand what volatility is. And I think our audience intuitively understands volatility, but maybe doesn't understand from an investment perspective what that exactly is. So I'm wondering if you can share with the audience, you know, what we as investment professionals consider volatility.
Sure. Volatility is typically the standard deviation of the price, meaning the first derivative of price is return. The second derivative of the price equation is volatility. And so it tells you how the stock is going to behave over a longer period. So when we look at, there's really many definitions. One definition of volatility is, I don't want to lose money.
Right.
I lose money, I have a negative return. That's negative volatility, and I don't want that.
Right.
It's very hard to eliminate that. There's volatility in terms of how am I relative to my benchmark? Am I above my benchmark, below my benchmark, and, you know, relative performance? And I think there's absolute, and then there's relative. And then I think that volatility has a lot to do with your own personal circumstances. So if you are depending on that money for a down payment on a house, if you're putting that money at risk for your children's college fund, the volatility that you're willing to absorb or experience goes down as you get closer to that kid going to college. So therefore, you don't want to make a mistake, and you will try to obtain less volatility, meaning less variation in the price of the object or the stock. So I think that we all have different definitions of volatility, but I would say the most consistent one is the second derivative of price or the standard deviation of a given return.
Yeah. So, Steve, just to stay on that point about volatility for a second, since someone, our audience, may not understand derivatives, first and second derivatives, I have in my mind, and maybe our audience should too, the standard bell curve. You know, the bell curve being that being the curve that looks like the Liberty Bell in Philadelphia. Where you have a bulge in the middle that goes up, which is the average, and then you have on the you have the curve curving down to the left, and you have the curve curving down to the right. Well, it's nice to have returns off on the curve to the right because it means higher returns. But what you're trying to protect against is a lot of negative returns on the left side of the bell curve, because then you're well below what the average returns could be. So that's what we're talking about here, just visually. If you can visualize that bell curve, we don't want to be on the left side where you have all those negative returns.
We'll be right back.
We hope you're enjoying our episodes. If you are, then we'd greatly appreciate your liking, following, and sharing. Help us help others. Now let's get back to the discussion.
Right. I think about things in terms of Excel. And so when I say, you know, I have a column of returns going back 3 years, weekly returns, or daily returns, and I click and say equals standard dev of all of the items in the column.
Yep.
And then that gives you a number, and then you say, is this number, you know, weekly, monthly, or annualized? And then you apply a number to annualize it. So it's a mathematical concept. But what I was trying to get at is the personal concept of what volatility is to each individual. I agree. The bell curve, the reason I don't like to talk about the bell curve is that I believe we know that returns are skewed towards the positive side. So while a bell curve is a simple concept and a good idea, it's somewhat misleading. And therefore, I don't think any measure of return or of volatility is perfect. Right. Therefore, I like to give people more answers that are really relative to their own lifestyle and their own situations, because then they can understand, all right, I'm selling this entity, NVIDIA, that has a lot of volatility, good and bad, and then I'm putting it into treasuries. And those treasuries have guaranteed me that they will return, you know, what I, or short term or cash. If I'm not exposed to anything but inflation, and I think I understand what inflation is, then I can live with that for the next 2 or 3 months. We just bought a house. I was selling stocks and putting it in cash, and it made you feel very good when on the day of your closing, the market's down 2 or 3%, and all of your money is sitting there in cash, and you're able to make the transaction happen where you want to.
Yeah. So Steve, when, you know, I'm sure people are looking at NVIDIA or other stocks and are thinking, well, when is it a good time to sell? I mean, after all, you know, price targets, you know, as prices go up, people tend to adjust their price targets because they think, well, NVIDIA's reached this point, it's going to go up even more. So how do you address that?
I think that one of the biggest issues with people is that once they see a price, they can't accept the price that's lower than that. So we have a perception issue, and it's a behavioral issue where people are just always wanting something more. You say, I'm happy if this goes to 1,000, I'll sell at 1,000. But if you're at 1,050, suddenly the 1,000 doesn't feel that good. So it's really working with against your biases, which is your perception changes. You say, oh, look at this new product, or look at this new application for AI, and look at how it's going to lead to more. There is always going to be positive and negative events. And we tend to have a confidence bias that we think we understand. And we think the past is the predictor of the future. I think all of these things, it's very hard for trees to grow to the sky. It's very hard for things to keep going up when there is reasonable people who look and say, I've taken my profit, now I'm going on to, you know, other. There's a retail weakness, which is when you see retail traders dominating a particular name at a time, and you see institutional traders or buyers starting to step back, and you say, hey, 80% of the buying is retail now, that's usually an indicator that the stock may have, you know, the example of JP Morgan, when the shoeshine boy tells him what stock he should buy, he realizes it's probably time to get out of this. And I think that people just have to be practical and say, I can't always buy things because I'm a fear of FOMO, fear of missing out. I should be buying things that I understand and I want to hold for a long time. And then if it performs the way I expected and it gives me the result I wanted, which is I want to grow this asset so that I can afford to pay for my child's college or a car or a house. When you get to the target and you need, it's wise to just take some chips off the table and go to another place where you think that you'll be fairly compensated. So
Steve,
I think it's a very hard topic. And this is kind of one of the things that I don't think there is a clear answer here.
But do you always do this in your portfolio, or are you selective about using options?
No, this is something that you apply as needed. And when you're having trouble figuring out what to do and how to handle a stock, this is one solution that should be in your tool bag. I think that when you think of all of the things that you can do, I can sell, I can hedge, I can write calls. This should be one of the things you think about and whether it makes sense. every situation is different for every client and every investor. So what I would say is, let's just make sure that this is a tool at your disposal so that you have a chance to eliminate some of that regret. I think if it goes up to 1,050 and then comes back down to 800, not having sold that call will feel very hard for you to. So think about it as a choice on the multiple choice of what to do with investing to try to manage your risk and manage your return. It always helps to take some profits and allow yourself some choices in terms of other things to invest in.
So, Steve, how do our listeners actually get started, with options? They may not know where to begin.
So first, your account has to be set up for options. So you can look at your the firm you have your assets custodied at, and there's usually an option, standardized option agreement that you must sign that says you understand how options work and the risk associated with the option. I think it's a good way for people, even if they don't use options, go through the process, learn about them, set up your account for them, and start slow. Start slow and grow your knowledge. It helps you in the end. If you ever need to do something, you're set up to do it. I'm not recommending these for everyone. I don't think they're right for people who don't understand it and read the document and say, I don't get this, then it's not for you. I think that for some investors, these should be a tool that you have. And the way you set it up is talk to your existing advisor or talk to your existing custodian and set your account up for option.
So Steve, I'm foraging around in our mailbag, and I'm pulling out one here on options. Do you think now is a particularly good time to use options?
Yes, I think that in terms of the move we've had in the markets, I believe that this move has been prolonged and has reached a point where it's not fully discounting all the possibilities. So when I see the 52-week highs that we're hitting, and I see some of the level of disparity between the Magnificent Seven and other names, these are all signals that there perhaps is a good time for you to sell calls, to buy puts, or to hedge. So I would say, yes, this is a good time to use those. And I would recommend people, even if they don't end up using them, understanding them is going to make you a better investor and ultimately allow you to have more flexibility with how you want to manage. One strategy many people use is to sell calls in the next year. So if we're in 2024 and I sell a January 2025 option, I'm putting that trade into the next tax year. And by doing it in January, I'm not going to actually pay the capital gains on that if it hits until April of 26. So it really allows you to defer into the future and manage your last aspect of your results, which is taxes.
So Steve, in 30 seconds or less, what are the takeaways that our listeners should take from this episode?
So options are one tool that an investor should use to help manage their overall portfolio. Discipline matters. And when you use options like this, it instills a discipline that says, I've identified a price, I feel comfortable with that price, and I'm willing to let my shares go at that price. Past does not predict the future. Just because it's run from 600 to 900 does not mean that it's going to run from 900 to 1200. There is a caveat that you always say, the past does not predict the future. And then the last item is, you never go broke taking profits. My father was a tax accountant, and he used to say, if you keep taking profits, you're always going to be managing your cash flow, And that's ultimately what you want, is to have more resources applied to more areas of the market so that you can do well with your money. So I'd say that keep it simple and understand what you're doing and learn. Those are principles that apply to everyone.
So, Steve, thank you very much for this amazing lesson on the use of options in this kind of market. And we thank all of our listeners for tuning in and listening to our podcasts. So if you like these podcasts, make sure to, you know, to like them and to subscribe. And we look forward to sharing with you on a future episode of Skeptic's Guide to Investing.
Thanks, everybody.
The views shared on this podcast represent the personal investment views of the hosts. They are for educational purposes and not meant to be taken as investment advice. Listeners should consult their own investment, legal, and tax advisors. Past performance of any investments is not a guarantee for future return.